Eric, you wrote a blog post recently. Again, if you want to check it out, it's on ageconmt.com, about some initial thoughts of the recent agreement between China and the United States to begin increasing beef trade with China and begin exporting beef to China. And that's particularly exciting for Montana producers because we produce a lot of livestock that could be potentially exported to China. So maybe you can start with giving us a little bit of a background and some insights about that. And then, Todd, maybe you can jump in and talk about the, you know, how would something like this, a policy, how could that potentially impact land values in Montana? And from past experience or from past research, how quickly we might see that asset class increase in value potentially?
Yeah. So, yeah, the China question is one I get a lot. And people, especially in the beef industry here in Montana, want to know, well, why aren't we selling into the Chinese market? And a lot of times I don't have a good answer because it's really a political question, I think. And so it has been something that over the last couple of years has been a lot of movement, especially out of Montana. You know, there's been trade delegations that have gone out from the state. You know, Steve Dane sort of, you know, brought an ice chest of Montana beef out, right, if you remember that. And then so, you know, here we are and, you know, deciding to open up China as a partner in China, sitting right now as the largest importer of beef is a great market. You know, I think in terms of if you think about the viability of the beef sector, you know, the more consumer markets you can be selling into, the better. I do kind of wonder what kind of advantage we have. We are competing with other countries that do a pretty good job of ground beef production and can oftentimes produce it at a lower cost than us. The China market will be an interesting one to look at. But I think, you know, as with any other commodity, it's probably the more markets you can be selling into, I think the more assurances there are that the sector will be growing in the future.
So one of the things that is really interesting about Montana's and U.S. beef in general is it's a high quality beef. And as Todd was talking about a little bit earlier, that look, when incomes rise, you switch from, you know, plant-based diet to a protein-based diet. And then, you know, just eating chicken is not sufficient. You want pork, and then pork is not sufficient. You want beef, and you go from ground beef to really delicious steaks. And the story that you brought up, Senator Daines, one of the senators from Montana, he went over to China as part of the negotiating he was doing and brought in a cooler of Montana beef saying, well, I'm going to bring Montana beef to China for them to try no matter what. So that kind of, I think, that kind of idea was perhaps helpful in making the deal possible. But it's certainly a quality issue that perhaps the Chinese market is moving into a higher quality product rather than just, you know, ready to eat beef. So we produce higher quality beef, arguably, and now we have more consumers who might buy that beef. What is that going to do to land prices, Todd?
Well, one of the sort of thought leaders in the farmland investment space, frequently I've heard him say that a good position is to be long on whatever China is short on, right? And so if they are a growing economy, then thinking about the commodities that they would want to consume, that they'll need to consume, is a good long-term investment idea. And the United States also, I should say, has a history of exporting to whoever is the fastest growing economy in the marketplace. So we had, obviously, you know, part of the 1980s farm finance crisis was the closure of the Russian markets, right? And that was the fastest growing economy. And then we switched to, you know, other parts of the world. Japan was really big, you know, at one point. And then now China seems to be the focus. And so a lot of people will say, well, what after China? And I think, well, you know, there would be some disruption. But then we would find who's the next fastest growing. Maybe that will be India. Maybe it'll be Mexico. Maybe it'll be, you know, Russia again. Who knows? And so that's sort of the idea, is that whatever we are really efficient at producing and distributing to the rest of the world, we're going to sell it to whoever is going to be the highest bidder. And so that does put upward pressure on the asset base, particularly in land markets. But again, that also, you know, as the rent, land prices go up, so do the rents. And so it's a complicated equation instead of saying, well, where are the profits going to be? And a lot of those have to do with sort of the general efficiencies and how the sector evolves, right? So are we going to evolve the way that commercial real estate has, where commercial real estate used to be mom and pop businesses owned the land and they owned the building and they owned all the assets. And now if you want to open a bakery, instead of buying a bakery, you lease a bakery and you buy, you know, some machinery or bring your recipes. And so there's some real indication that agriculture will start increasingly move that way. So the owners of the asset base may not be the people that are farming it and acting it as much. But that's a very long, slow, gradual transition, I think. But
yeah, well, I think your analogy to the glacier is iceberg, not glacier, is a good one.
I'm from the Midwest. We don't know the difference.
because it really is. It's income today, but it's also its income expectations for the future, for the next 20 years. And so I think, particularly with beef and these trade deals, one thing that's hard to think about in the near term is the impact of these deals today, especially when they're very slowly kind of ratcheting down tariffs. But when you sort of translate that to, well, what are my expectations for 20 years from now? It's a lot different. So, I mean, you could see it, you know, capitalize into land a little bit differently than, you know, what you're seeing in the trade today.
Yeah. And if you look at the data that we have, there's some indication that people that own farmland tend to own it for about 30 years. And then when they stop owning it, about half of that land goes to their heirs. Right. So most people buy it as a long run investment. Right. And it's viewed that way. Even the sort of newer entrance into the land market space, you know, people talk about institutional investors, but most of those are places like pension funds or people that want to have exposure for a very long run asset. It's not going to be sort of a quick, I don't think we'll ever see like day trading of farmland. Right. And so these sort of very long run impacts, are, I think, how the asset is valued in the marketplace.